Welcome to the Federalist Society's Practice Group podcast. The following podcast, hosted by the Federalist Society's Federalism and Separation of Powers Practice Group, was recorded on Monday, December 5, 2017, during a live Courthouse Steps Teleform conference call held exclusively for Federalist Society members.
Welcome to the Federalist Society's Teleform conference call. This afternoon, we will be discussing Christie v. National Collegiate Athletic Association, which was heard today in the Supreme Court. My name is Wesley Hodges, and I'm the Associate Director of Practice Groups at the Federalist Society. As always, please note that all expressions of opinion are those of the expert on today's call. Today, we are happy to have with us Mr. Albert Lynn, who is a partner at Hunton & Williams, LLP. After remarks from Albert, who was at the hearing this morning, we will go to an audience Q&A. Thank you for speaking with us, Albert. The floor is now yours.
Thank you. Thanks for everyone for calling in. Let me just start with a little bit of background so we're all starting from the same place. So the case, Christie versus NCAA, at its root is about this federal statute called the Professional and Amateur Sports Protection Act, which in effect bars sports wagering through state laws that bar sports wagering throughout the United States. There are exceptions for a handful of states, including Nevada. But in this case, the exceptions don't apply to New Jersey. There's a wrinkle in it that's not super relevant. So what happened was that law was passed in 1992, a couple years ago. New Jersey decided that it wanted to legalize sports wagering. And so it actually had to amend the state constitution, and then it passed a law that, as my friend Matt McGill, who represents New Jersey, said, they passed a law that would have implemented Nevada-style regulation of sports wagering, so in essence a regulatory regime for sports gambling in New Jersey at casinos and racetracks. It's important to go through this background history. There are actually two rounds because it helps focus in on what the question ultimately is. So that first law, New Jersey was sued by the NCAA and four professional sports leagues. And in response, New Jersey said that PASPA was unconstitutional, that it violated the prohibition on the commandeering of states. And so, which I'll get to in a little bit. That went to the Third Circuit. It went all the way up to the Supreme Court. Cert was denied. But the important thing, a very important fact, is that when cert was denied, one of the arguments that the United States made in defense of PASPA was that the law does not prohibit, while it does prohibit, they said, New Jersey from passing a sort of Nevada-style regulatory regime of sports wagering. It does not prohibit states from repealing in whole or in part their existing prohibitions on sports wagering. So it went back down, so that was sort of the end of that case, and then New Jersey passed a new law that said, okay, well, we're not going to impose a regulatory regime, we're just going to repeal our laws, our prohibitions on sports gambling to the extent that they apply to casinos and racetracks. They were sued again by the NCAA and the various sports leagues, lost in the district court and the Third Circuit and en banc, and then the Supreme Court granted cert, and here we are. I should disclose at this point that when I was the Solicitor General of the state of West Virginia, we supported New Jersey through a number of these stages of review, including amicus support for both cert petitions. Ultimately, West Virginia led a brief with 17 other states and three governors in support of New Jersey on the merits. I'm not actually on that brief. It was filed after I left the office. So there are really sort of three issues in the case. And the first is a statutory question, which is, does PASPA cover the latest New Jersey law, the partial repeal. And there's some dispute over this, and asserted quite vigorously by the United States, has come in as amicus, because if New Jersey, if there's sort of, their argument is that there's, you know, there may be ways to avoid the constitutional question. So the question is, so PASPA says it has a lot of different provisions in it, but one provision, the provision that's at issue, bars states from authorizing or licensing sports wagering. And so the opening question is, does PASPA cover a partial repeal? Is a partial repeal of the state's sports wagering laws the authorization or licensing of sports wagering? The second question is, if PASPA does apply, is PASPA constitutional? So if PASPA prohibits the New Jersey law that does a partial repeal, and if it prohibits it because that is considered the authorization or licensing of sports wagering, is that a violation of the anti-commandeering principle? So I'll sort of pause here and just a brief primer on the anti-commandeering principle. So the anti-commandeering principle was sort of affirmed and explained by the Supreme Court in two landmark decisions called New York versus United States and Prince versus United States. And really what they boil down to is that the federal government, if it wants to regulate individual behavior, it needs to do it itself, or it needs to incentivize the states to help the federal government. But the federal government cannot make the states help or help the federal government enact federal policy or make the states enact federal policy. There's a line from New York versus United States that says the federal government cannot regulate the states' regulation. And so the question is, you know, by prohibiting states from authorizing or licensing sports wagering, and if it applies here, by prohibiting New Jersey from repealing in part their own laws, is that a violation of the anti-commandeering principle insofar as it, you know, it is barring, it is making the states essentially prohibit sports wagering? And then the third question, which got a little bit of played argument today, is a severability question. And so New Jersey's at issue in this case is only one provision of PASPA. And as the United States argued quite vigorously, only two of the conditions in one of the provisions of PASPA. And so there is a question that if the court reaches the constitutional question and finds that, you know, the provision that prohibits the authorizing or licensing by states of sports wagering, does the court just strike that part of the law, or does it strike the whole thing? So with that, let me turn to the argument. So today was, for those of you who have been following this, you will know it was sort of a heavyweight fight between a lot of very skilled, very experienced Supreme Court advocates on the side of New Jersey, and Governor Christie was actually there today being sworn in to the Supreme Court bar, was Ted Olson from Gibson Dunn. On the side of the NCAA and the sports leagues was Paul Clement, who once upon a time was Ted Olson's principal deputy solicitor general in the U.S. Solicitor General's office. And then for the United States was Jeff Wall, the current principal deputy solicitor general. So Ted Olson got up first, and he focused most of his argument on their view, New Jersey's view, that the PASPA is essentially a freestanding preemption provision. And so his argument is, because one of the very first questions he got out of the box and the argument of the other side is, this is not anti-commandeering, this is just preemption. This is just the federal government under the Supremacy Clause saying, you know, foreclosing some policy preferences on the part of states, saying as a matter of federal law that, you know, federal law and federal policy is supreme, and you can't allow sports wagering because that would conflict with federal policy. And Mr. Olson's argument is that, you know, this is not preemption. There is a difference between preemption and commandeering, and that the difference is where there is preemption, there must be an underlying existing federal regime, whether it's a federal regulatory regime or a federal deregulatory regime. There must be some federal regime that preemption essentially is serving to protect. So, you know, if the federal government prohibited individuals from sports gambling and criminalized that or prohibited that as a matter of federal law, and then had enacted a provision that said, and there shall, you know, any notwithstanding any contrary state law, that would be a preemption provision. But his argument, and what he spent most of his opening time on, was arguing that there is no federal regime, that this is just a sort of a freewheeling, freestanding, you know, provision that you know, purports to require states to keep their laws in place, and that that is not preemption, that that crosses the line to commandeering. He quoted a number of times from what sounded like the sort of purpose or, you know, title provision of PASPA that said, you know, trying to remember if I wrote it down, it said, you know, the purpose is to prohibit sports wagering under state law, which he sort of emphasized a number of times. It was not to prohibit sports wagering as a matter of federal law, but to prohibit sports wagering under state law. He referred a couple times to a Congressional Budget Office report that had come out when PASPA was being considered that said that the cost of the federal government of PASPA was zero. And, you know, it sort of to bolster his point, that his view that, you know, there is no underlying federal regime, that what's happening here is the federal government is basically just seeking to use the states and use existing state law as the vehicle for prohibiting sports wagering. He stressed the principle in the anti-commandeering cases, New York and Prince, that if the federal government wants to regulate, that it needs to take responsibility, that it needs to be accountable, that this was one of the core principles that the founders wanted to accomplish when they met for the convention, that one of the key flaws to the Articles of Confederation was that the federal government could regulate the states directly, and that blurs lines of accountability, you know, from the perspective of the individual citizen. Is it the state that's regulating me? Is it the state that's prohibiting my sports wagering? Or is it the federal government really that's responsible? Who do I hold accountable for this? Ted got a number of questions, mostly from Justice Kagan and Justice Sotomayor, that were skeptical. Justice Sotomayor actually asked what I thought was a very interesting and a good question, where she said, you know, I think there are three ways to look at this case. You know, one of them is that where we could avoid this constitutional question, and where we could read PASPA not to apply to the statute here, that what New Jersey has done, this partial repeal, is not, in fact, authorizing or licensing within the meaning of PASPA. And so, you know, New Jersey wins this case, but we don't reach the constitutional question. She said the second way of looking at this case is the way that Mr. Olson and New Jersey want to look at it, which is that the statute prohibits any repeal at all. And then the third way of looking at it, she said, is you have to confront the constitutional question. And then the third way, the government says the statute permits a full repeal and permits some other partial repeals, just not the partial repeal that's at issue here, the very specific one that New Jersey has tried to enact. And in that case, the government's position is, you know, this, you don't have to reach the anti-commandeering question, because in most cases, that was the implication, you know, PASPA doesn't prohibit the repeal of laws. It's just this particular type of repeal where New Jersey has tried to repeal the statute as it applies to just casinos and racetracks, that is effectively authorizing, that's selectively authorizing sports wagering, and that's barred by PASPA. But again, there's a whole swath of other activity that the state could do, and that for that reason, the court doesn't have to reach the constitutional question. Justice Kagan asked, she said, you know, as she reads the commandeering cases, the prohibition there is on conscripting the state actors or the state legislature into doing the government's bidding. And she asked Mr. Olson, you know, who is being conscripted here? You know, how is the state being conscripted? I think some of the most interesting questions asked on during Mr. Olson's opening presentation were the ones by Justice Breyer and then Justice Kennedy and Justice Gorsuch. And I'll start with Justice Breyer. Justice Breyer seemed to put it very bluntly, seemed to get it and seemed to seem sympathetic to the concern about the federal government's prohibition on sports wagering being done entirely through the states. And he reframed Ted's point at one point, and you know, again, sort of seemed to really get and share the concern about the federal government not having its own laws and not having its own prohibition, but that all of the prohibitions on sports wagering are done through state law. Justice Gorsuch asked at one point, and it made his position a little bit tricky to pin down, about a statutory interpretation question. And he asked Mr. Olson why he wasn't advocating for a narrower view of the statute in light of the principles of constitutional avoidance that the court usually follows. His question was, you know, if we, the court, read PASPA's prohibition against authorizing and licensing not to apply to any repeals, including the partial repeal in this case, don't we avoid the constitutional question? And isn't that, you know, a principle that this court tends to follow? So it wasn't totally clear to me if Justice Gorsuch was signaling that he might take a slightly different approach to this case. It would still result in a victory by New Jersey, but he seemed to be, you know, questioning whether the statute had to be read in a way that would force the court to reach the constitutional question. And then a very interesting question to me was asked by Justice Kennedy, and I don't think Mr. Olson responded to it directly. Justice Kennedy asked at one point, can we interpret PASPA to preempt only if the state legislates? And it was, I think, not phrased in a way that made it obvious what he was getting at, but there's actually a brief in the docket by a number of law professors that basically argued that preemption happens only where the federal government is displacing existing state law or preventing the states from passing a law, but that this is not preemption here, because what it is, even if you if you read the statute to prohibit the repeal of existing state law, that is not preemption in any circumstance, because prohibiting the repeal of a state law is not the displacement of inconsistent state law, which is what the Supremacy Clause permits. So it's not displacing state law at all. It's in fact requiring state law to remain on the books. And I think that's what Justice Kennedy was asking about when he said, can we interpret PASPA to preempt only if the state affirmatively enacts legislation? So he didn't pursue that line of questioning anymore throughout the argument, but it's something to keep an eye on, and you know, maybe something that Justice Kennedy writes about in a concurrence. So after Justice, Ted Olson, then Paul Clement stood up and argued on behalf of the sports leagues and the NCAA. He started with a focus on the fact that the part of PASPA that's at issue is, as I said earlier, just a, in his view, a small part of the much larger statute, that it's just, you know, authorizing or licensing, the prohibition on authorizing or licensing by states is just one part of a larger provision, and then that there are other provisions in the PASPA that go to individual conduct under state law. So that's where he started, and he got a fair number of questions from the court's more conservative members, although also some from the other members of the court. And you know, it became very clear, and this is something that he argues in his brief, but it was, I think, on display today at the court, that Paul, on behalf of his clients, has to take a very narrow view of commandeering. And he was asked at one point by, I believe it was Justice Kagan, if I have that right, you know, to give me one example of a partial repeal that works. And he was also asked about, you know, what is the difference between preemption and commandeering. And ultimately, you know, his answer was, you know, commandeering is something that happens only where the federal government is mandating that the states do something, not where it's prohibiting the states from doing something. He was then asked a point that was made in the briefs by Ted Olson, that, you know, can't you just reframe an affirmative statement, a negative prohibition into an affirmative requirement? And actually don't remember what he said in response to that. But, it, you know, when he was asked a number of hypotheticals by the chief about, you know, well, could the federal government do this? Could the federal government do that? You know, the answers that Mr. Clement had to give were, you know, that's not a commandeering problem. There may be, you know, at some level, there was sort of an intuitive federalism objection to the hypotheticals, and his answer was, you know, there may be some other federalism problem there, but it's not commandeering. You know, commandeering is not that broad. I thought at one point an interesting question by the chief was, you know, where he sort of suggested that, you know, PASPA is at a minimum a highly unusual statute. He said, "Why can't we? You know, couldn't the federal government just have had a law that prohibited sports wagering by individuals, and then, and this is his words, you know, in a quote normal unquote preemption clause, just said something like, you know, notwithstanding any contrary state law." So it does seem to me, between that question and some other ones, that the chief is pretty concerned about the constitutionality of the statute. Justice Kennedy was, I believe, the first one out of the box with a question where he said something along the lines of, you know, what's happened here is that New Jersey and the people of New Jersey are now bound to obey a law that they don't want, but that the federal government is compelling the state to keep. So he seemed to be pretty clearly concerned about the way that this has played out from a federalism standpoint. Justice Alito did not ask very many questions today, but the one question that I wrote down that he asked was of Paul Clement, and he said, sort of almost more coming at the constitutional question from a slightly different angle, he said, "What is served by this law, you know, this law that regulates sports wagering through existing state law prohibitions, what is served through PASPA that wouldn't be served by Congress directly prohibiting sports wagering by individuals?" And the answer there from Paul Clement was, he sort of turned around the federalism angle and said, You know, it actually furthers federalism principles to have the law written in this way, because it allows the different states to have different levels of regulation, penalties for sports wagering, instead of a sort of one size fits all mandated by the federal government. I think, again, for me, one of the most interesting questions of Paul Clement was from Justice Breyer, again, sort of showing, perhaps showing his cards on this. At one point, he asked of Paul, for the Airline Deregulation Act, you could say that the federal principle there is that, as a matter of federal policy, you know, the Congress wants market forces to determine what the prices are for, you know, air travel. What is the one sentence answer to the federal, you know, policy that is effectuated by PASPA? You know, and so he said, please, fill in the blank. And Paul's answer was something like, the policy is that, there shall not be any state-sponsored sports wagering. And, it was there that Justice Breyer said, well, aha, I mean, in order to give the answer, you had to, use the phrase state-sponsored. And it reveals, again, that sort of all of, despite all the provisions that you've pointed to try to establish that there's a federal regime, the prohibition on sports wagering, though it may be written in the United States Code, is all dependent on, happening through state law. At which point there was, for those who keep track of laughter in the Supreme Court, Paul then said, can I amend my answer, which drew laughter from many of the justices in the gallery. The other thing I'll mention is Justice Kennedy also emphasized his concerns about how PASPA blurs accountability. As I mentioned before, I mean, who's responsible for this prohibition on sports wagering? Is it the state? Is it the federal government? And that seemed to really concern him. Paul's time had run, Jeff Wall, the current principal deputy solicitor general, stood up and made his argument. The theme that Jeff seemed to be trying to push was, and this is in some ways consistent with Paul's theme about how, what's at issue here is just a very small part of a much larger scheme. He said, what New Jersey is trying to do here is they want to read PASPA in an unnatural way, a very small part of PASPA in an unnatural way, so that it, authorizer license covers, any attempts to repeal by the state, and then take that manufactured problem with a small part of the statute and leverage it into striking down the entire statute. And he had a very a colorful analogy to trying to leverage, a small sickness into, taking down the whole patient. Most of his time, he got to talk for a little bit at the beginning, but most of his time, once the justices got going, was to get at this question of, because the government's position is, PASPA in prohibiting the authorizing or licensing of sports wagering applies to, this particular type of repeal that New Jersey did, because, this is not really just a repeal. It's really doing the same thing as what they tried before. It's channeling sports wagering into casinos and racetracks by, purporting to repeal it only in part for those locations. But that, other repeals might be okay, and so that's why the court doesn't have to reach the constitutional question. Jeff got a lot of questions on that front about what is the difference between this partial repeal and another partial repeal. Justice Sotomayor stressed a couple times that what New Jersey did in the second round is different from what it did in the first round, because – It did not attempt to create a licensing regime. It was, you know, even if it's channeling sports gambling into certain venues, it's still not imposing a new regulatory regime on those venues for sports wagering in particular. It's just repealing the prohibition on sports wagering. And there was a lot of back and forth about how to draw that line. To sort of come back to the point that I had mentioned at the beginning, Justice Ginsburg actually asked Jeff about what the government had said in their brief in opposition to certiorari the first time this case went up to the court. She said, you know, the government, when they were last here asking us to deny cert, had said that PASPA does not prohibit, while it does prohibit this sort of Nevada-style licensing regime, the prohibition on authorizing and licensing does not apply to prevent the state of New Jersey from repealing in whole or in part their sports gambling laws. And Jeff's answer to that was that he did not think that they were saying anything different now than they were saying then, that, you know, they had not anticipated the, I can't remember the exact word, but the sort of ingenuity or, what, you know, cleverness or the way in which New Jersey would go about trying to accomplish, in different words, the same thing that they had done before. I personally am not sure that that's true. I think seems slightly different, the partial repeal than the sort of broader regulatory regime, but that was the answer that Jeff gave. So, and then Mr. Olson got back up and gave his rebuttal, his reply, and that covers the recap. Do we want to go to questions?
Okay, sounds good. Let's go ahead and move to audience questions. In a moment, you'll hear a prompt indicating that the floor mode has been turned on. After that, to request the floor, please enter the star key and then the pound key on your telephone. While we have our question queue build up, I'd like to start by asking Albert, how do you think that this case, how do you think the case is going to turn out? What's your quick prediction on this?
Sure. If I had to count heads, overall, I think New Jersey is probably going to win. I'm not sure that they have the votes to win on the constitutional front, just because I'm not sure where Justice Gorsuch comes down in particular on the statutory interpretation question. And then Justice Kennedy had also asked sort of, as I mentioned, an interesting question about the reading of the statute. So I think at the end of the day, New Jersey wins. I think they probably win 6-3. That would be the Chief Thomas, Alito, Kennedy, Gorsuch, and Breyer. And then probably with Ginsburg, Sotomayor, and Kagan voting against. But that six could be somewhat fractured between justices willing to support sort of the broader constitutional holding, striking down PASPA in whole or in part, and then some that may just want to find in favor of New Jersey on a narrower construction of the statute.
Thank you, Albert. Looks like we have a couple questions in the queue. Let's move to our first audience question.
Hi, can you hear me?
I can.
Okay, great. First, thanks for your time. Very clear breakdown. My question is just about something I think in the discussion of Mr. Clement's argument and then a question from Justice Kagan. You also said something about what's the difference between preemption and commandeering. And I think the answer that he gave according to your presentation was that commandeering only happens when the state courts are mandated to do something. And that reminds me of the Reno case, the Driver Privacy Protection Act, which forbids selling, you know, databases of info collected by the DMV. If New Jersey is going to win, how do they get out of that particular case?
The Reno case, at least the way we distinguished it in our briefs, was that that had to do with the state as a market participant. And so there were some questions about that, which I didn't mention. I mean, one point, Justice Sotomayor asked whether, you know, this is commercial activity. And it wasn't totally clear where she was going with that, but, you know, she could have been asking, is this a regulation of is this just a regulation of New Jersey as a market participant? And the market participant angle is not commandeering, because they're not regulating the federal government is not regulating the states as states. They're regulating the states essentially in the same ways that they would regulate individuals who participate in any sort of marketplace. So that's how we distinguished Reno on the and that, if I remember correctly, that's what at least one way in which New Jersey also distinguished that case.
Great, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for your question, caller. Let's move to our next question.
Hello, thank you for your presentation. You had left off by noting Ted Olson's rebuttal. Would you kindly discuss that at some length?
Oh, sure. So I didn't talk a lot about the rebuttal because most of the time was taken up by a back and forth between him and Justice Sotomayor that I didn't really write down, because if I remember correctly, it was a bit of a rehash of a point that had been discussed before. He ended up being given more time by the chief to just sort of sum up essentially, and you know, he returned to many of the same themes that he had at the beginning, that you know, this idea of the anti-commandeering doctrine is, you know, really a foundational principle, that it is you know, was one of the sort of cornerstone premises at the convention in terms of, you know, trying to fix one of the errors that they saw with the Articles of Confederation. And that anti-commandeering really is about, and this theme is in their briefs as well, and a little bit in ours, that anti-commandeering is about maximizing individual liberty and giving, you know, making sure that, you know, we sort of keep to this idea that, you know, state governments and federal governments govern independently, and that, you know, you as an individual could have a strong state government that acts as a, you know, he didn't go into this, but acts as a check on the federal government, that, you know, dissents from federal government policies, you know, unless the federal government steps in and regulates in the space, occupies the field, you know, does something that preempts states from acting. So, the short answer to your question is, I don't remember anything particularly notable from the rebuttal that would have changed my sense of where the case was going.
Thank you for your question, caller. Looks like we have one more question in the queue. Let's move to the caller.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. I heard an exchange between Justice Gorsuch and the Principal Deputy Solicitor General, in which Justice Gorsuch basically asked kind of a limiting principle question about how much of a partial repeal is okay. And please correct me if I'm wrong, but I didn't hear an answer to the question. I heard an answer that was what New Jersey couldn't do, and it came back to this idea that channeling through a partial repeal, channeling the unregulated sports betting to racetracks and casinos that are otherwise regulated by other parts of New Jersey gambling law was not okay, but that the government didn't say what was okay. Correct me if I heard or didn't hear that correctly, and what significance do you place on that exchange?
Yeah, I heard it the same way. I think I did not hear the United States drawing. Now, I mean, I guess you could say maybe there. I mean, I think what he tried to articulate as the principle is, it's not okay where you have a repeal that channels, you know, sports wagering to, you know, the state's preferred locations, which sounded like this repeal is not okay, but all other repeals are okay. I mean, and I think you're right. It wasn't clear whether he was saying they are all other ones are okay or all other ones might be okay. And which is, you know, oftentimes, you know, an appellate lawyer's comfort zone is just, you know, fallback position to say, oh, look, this case is clear. I don't know what the other cases might be. So it did sound like that's what he was saying. I think for me, and again, I mean, I am obviously biased having weighed in on one side of this case, but I found the answer a little bit dissatisfying because it's not clear to me why that makes sense as a principled constitutional line. I mean, what I heard from Jeff, for whom I have great respect, is that this is not okay because sports wagering in these sort of state-sponsored institutions is what Congress was trying to prevent in PASPA. So that is covered by the statute, and that's preemption. Everything else, you just sort of don't have to get into. But so I don't think you heard it wrong. I think that's exactly what he said. I'm just not sure. It did not seem to me that gave Justice Gorsuch comfort. But at some point we're just reading the tea leaves.
Thank you for your question, caller. The audience queue is currently open. If you'd like to ask a question, please enter the star key and then the pound key on your telephone. While we wait for any questions before we end the call today, I'd just like to announce that our next Teleform conference call is scheduled for tomorrow, December 5th at 3 p.m. Eastern. That call will be a Courthouse Steps call on Masterpiece Cake Shop, the Colorado CRC, and will feature Kim Colby, who is the director at the Center for Law and Religious Freedom at the Christian Legal Society. Please keep an eye out for emails announcing these Teleform calls, and you can consult a full schedule on our website, as well as any previously recorded podcasts of these Teleform calls. You should be able to hear this call in the next coming days on our website. Seeing that there are no more questions, Albert, is there any closing remarks that you would like to make?
I guess the only thing I would say is, and most people wouldn't be on this call if they didn't already agree with this, is, there is a very interesting factual element to this case about sports wagering. I think it has the potential to have, significant economic implications. But the broader story here is that there is an important federalism principle here about, the limit on the government's ability to sort of command states to regulate in certain ways. And there's a potentially important line. There is an important line between preemption and anti-commandeering that the court has an opportunity to articulate here. Now, I will mention that this just occurred to me when Principal Deputy Solicitor General Wall finished his argument. He did end sort of with a warning to the court, which is that if you strike down this statute as in violation of anti-commandeering, the federal government will have to spend a lot of time and effort trying to figure out where that line is between commandeering and preemption. Where is the line? And this is a question that Mr. Olson got quite a bit. How do we know that the federal government has enacted the requisite, underlying federal regime that makes something preemption as opposed to impermissible commandeering? And if the court decides to go in the constitutional direction, it will be interesting to see how they flesh that out. But anyway, my point is just, this is a case that it has sort of important but perhaps somewhat narrow implications for sports wagering, but it also has some very, very potentially significant ramifications for, the balance between federal and state power. And that's it, and thanks for having me.
Wonderful. Well, on behalf of the Federal Society, I'd like to thank Albert for the benefit of his valuable time and expertise today. We welcome all listener feedback by email at info@fedsoc.org. Thank you all for joining us today. This call is now adjourned.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this Practice Group podcast. For materials related to this podcast and other Federalist Society multimedia, please visit the Federalist Society's website at fedsoc.org/multimedia.